Welcome to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive knowledge showcase starring some of the geniuses that make the YouTube series SciShow happen. As always, we're joined by Stefan Chin.
Hello.
What's your favorite, least favorite pizza topic?
Least favorite?
No, your favorite, least favorite. It's the one that you love to hate the most.
Okay, so it's the one I love to hate, not the one that I least like.
Yes.
Anchovies, I love to hate, but also olives. Olives are stupid little flavor packets of disgust.
They have so salty. Much bad flavor.
Yeah.
Stefan, what's your tagline?
Mired and tired.
Sam Schultz is here too.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
What's your favorite fair food?
I like a chocolate chip cookie. Is that fair food?
Oh, God.
Like deep a chocolate chip cookie sandwich.
Deep fried chocolate chip cookie, heck
I don't know.
Yes.
Maybe I could try that.
Yeah, I'm like, it sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
What's your tagline?
From ghosts and ghouls to logs of yules.
Ooh. Oh, we've made the transition.
Yeah, no more spooky music at the beginning.
Yeah, Thanksgiving can go right down the hole.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
Sari Riley is joining us too.
Yes.
What's the best Pokemon?
I like Arcanine. Okay. It's nice. It's like a fire dog.
Mm.
I would like to pet it.
What's your tagline?
Slip and sliding.
Mm. And I'm Hank Green. And my tagline is incomparable shirt machine. And we are here on SciShow Tangents to every week get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts. We're playing for glory, but we're also keeping score and awarding Hank Bucks from week to week. We do our best to stay on topic, but if you go out on a tangent and we deem that tangent unworthy, like if it's about a lot of Twilight stuff, we will dock you a Hank Buck. It's episode 52.
We're a year old.
Oh, that's how years work. Oh, wow, we're a year old.
Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
Okay.
That means we have like 51 amazing episodes of SciShow Tangents. Mm-hmm. Why are we making any more?
Whoa.
That's so much content.
Well, we need to make at least one more to get to 52.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let us know if you want us to keep making SciShow Tangents at SciShow Tangents on Twitter. And now, as always, it's time to introduce the topic of the week with the science poem this week from Sari.
It's really freaking cold, they said. My nose, my feet, my hands, my head. I yearn to be back in my bed, but instead they lit a fire in red. It's really freaking dark, he cries. I'm stumbling upstairs and squinting my eyes. This lack of candles will be my demise. He sighs, but the sun begins to rise. We need a freaking boost, they thought, to move this hunk of metal a lot.
Mm.
But right now, air travel is awfully fraught. So then they gave combustion a shot. I'm really freaking tired, she wrote. My heart is sore, my days are rote. That fire inside us, that metaphorical moat, keeping us from burnout or giving off smoke, is doing its best to keep me afloat.
Wow.
That was really good.
That's exceptional. Well, our topic is fire. I think that this is a surprisingly difficult question to answer. What is fire?
Is it difficult? You're the chemist.
I mean, so combustion and oxidation, but like the thing that is fire, the actual thing that you're looking at.
The flames?
The flames. That's what I think of as fire. Because if it's just like a really hot coal and it's radiating a lot of infrared energy, that's not fire. Fire has to have the flames. Licking flames and the sparks going up and the smoke and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, what the thing you're seeing is, at this point, we are not sure yet.
You're talking about the flames.
The flames.
Okay. We don't know what flames are.
This is one thing that we know is a component of flames, is the little pieces of soot that are hot. And then as they get higher, they cool off, and then they just become smoke, and they like so you the glowing bit of the fire trails off. Yeah,
Need fuel.
Yeah,
oxygen or some other oxidizing agent, and then like a source of heat or something to start the combustion reaction because we don't have spontaneous combustion.
Usually, it can happen.
Usually.
People, there's this nice diagram on the internet that I'm sure if you Google it, it'll be like the fire tetrahedron.
Oh.
And so it's like fuel, oxygen, heat, and the chain reaction is one of the facets of the tetrahedron. And if any one of those four things goes away, it will no longer be fire. So if you have no fuel, the fire burns out. If you have no heat, the fire won't start. If you have no oxygen, the oxidation process won't happen. If the reaction just like runs out, if everything breaks down, then you don't have fire anymore.
Right.
So yeah, so that's why like fire extinguishers and things work. I don't know, anything for putting out fire, you're trying to remove one of those components, like remove the oxygen or separate it from the fuel or do whatever to put it out.
And now that we're well and truly defined as far as we could possibly get, it's time for or one of our panelists. This time, it's me. I've prepared three science facts for everyone's education and enjoyment, but one of those is real and the rest of them are lies, and you guys have to figure it out. And if you get it, then you get the Hank Buck. If you don't, then I do. So here are my three science facts. They're about a beetle, but a fire beetle. So when forests burn, usually all the animals run away from that. But there is a kind of beetle known as a fire chaser, also known as melanophylla beetles. And their larvae feed on the wood of defenseless, freshly burned trees. So to get their brood going, the beetles actively seek out forest fires, mating nearby and laying their eggs in recently burned trees. The beetles are so keen to get to a fire that when a 750,000-barrel oil storage tank in Coalinga ignited in 1925, they showed up in huge numbers from 50 to 100 miles away, most likely using their infrared pit detector organs. So they've got these like little infrared eyes under their arms that they can use to sniff out. But sometimes the beetles' fire detecting skills are not so discerning. Which of the following is a documented case of melanophylla swarm where the beetles were led astray? Number one, in 1958, workers at the Miller Brewing Facility in Irwindale, California, showed up to work one day to find the beetles gathered around their pipes, attracted to the heat radiating off of them. While the beetles were a nuisance and they didn't like it, it actually turned out that their presence alerted them to a dangerous overheating in their system, which ironically saved them from an actual fire. Huh. Number two, in the 1940s, multiple football games at UC Berkeley attracted the attention of nearby beetles who swarmed the stadium and began to bite fans. The beetles were drawn by the smoky haze above the stadium, which was the product of approximately 20,000 cigarettes being consumed in the stadium.
Cool.
Or number three, in 1987, the Society of American Magicians held its annual convention in Las Vegas, as you will do, and there was a dedicated special demonstration of fire breathing where approximately 1,000 performers all lit up and breathed fire throughout the day, and the demonstration became decidedly less special when the fire chasers attacked.
Ooh. Oh my goodness. Well, right off the bat, I feel like maybe they wouldn't attack. So the last two, maybe not.
They seem friendly.
Yeah, but they're nice.
They do bite though.
Okay. Oh. You understand bugs. What do you think?
Well, I do believe that a magician's conference would be in Las Vegas, so that checks out. But I don't know anything about beetles.
I bet there aren't even 1,000 fire breathers.
I feel like, yeah, that seems...
It's a lot.
Like, enough fire breathers to draw beetles seems sketchy. 20,000 cigarettes, what year was this?
It was in the 40s.
Cigarette
checks
time.
Out. Yeah. Dang it. I sort of think the beer one sounds the most plausible, which makes me think it's not true. The other ones would be like a really cool story that you'd want to make a torf out of.
I don't buy the beer one just because I don't feel like anything would get that hot, especially pipes maybe.
But if it was like, if there was something wrong that was like causing a fire hazard and then the beetles are like, hey, guys, you got a fire hazard over here.
I'm going with the football game one though.
I'm
football
also,
game, right? Is that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I also like the football game one. I'm going with it.
Okay.
Ooh, I'm going to go with magicians just because it sounds fun.
Thank God, because it was the football game.
Okay.
Yeah, 20,000 cigarettes. The thing that surprised me about this is that they have like, it's really well documented that they're good at detecting heat.
Uh-huh.
But this was just smoke.
Yeah.
So they're good at both.
Not even the right kind of smoke.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's just burned leaves.
I suppose.
So they go after smoke and they go after heat. And their heat detecting abilities are off the charts. They're wild. When scientists first were like, okay, let's do the math and figure out how much heat they can detect, they were like, that's physically impossible. Huh. Like that their neurons would be able to fire at the level necessary for them to actually receive a signal.
Uh-huh.
Based on the amount of heat that they were detecting. But it turned out that the background radiation plus the actual signal was the only thing that would actually trigger the neuron. If it was just the signal, it wouldn't be enough to trigger the neuron. But because there's like a regular background of infrared radiation, it was triggering it.
That's cool.
So that's really neat and weird.
That's sort of how I feel about dogs' noses or just any animal that can smell really well.
Yeah.
It's like, how can you detect that?
That doesn't seem possible.
Does not seem possible. You've got magic nose.
Magic nose. Speaking of magic, I made that up.
Fooled you.
I really just like the idea of magician friends bonding together right. and getting attacked and by beetles. Yeah.
But they do attack, and firefighters, so there was a Reddit thread where some California firefighters talked about these beetles. They call them ninja beetles, and they would sometimes grab them and then hold them up to their friend's arm. They would bite them just to like play a little prank.
Uh-huh.
And they suck, apparently. They're really annoying and they hate them a lot. And then the other thing I totally made up too, and they have been found around tar pits and cement kilns and even sugar syrup vats. So all those things have attracted these beetles. So there wasn't anything outlandish about it.
Uh-huh.
Could have picked that one. When there has been no yet known case of them alerting people to the possibility of a fire-like problem. Sure. But I predict it will happen sometime in the next 20 million years.
Ooh. Cool.
Anyway, it's time for us to take a break, and then we'll be back with the Fact Off. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's a tie ball game. 1-1.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah. So let's just keep it that way and end the episode. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
No one move forward
this
or
one
backward.
This 7 minutes long.
Or we can get ready for the Fact Off, where two panelists have brought science facts to present to the others in an attempt to blow our minds. And we each have a Hank Buck to give to the fact that we like the most. It's Sam versus Stefan, and we're going to decide who goes first with a trivia question. At what temperature does paper burn in Celsius?
Oh, God.
Balls.
How do you decide who wins? Is it just who closest?
Who's closest?
Okay.
You go first or me go first?
You go first.
270.
270.
Oh, I was going to say 270.
Oh, really?
No, I don't know. I have no idea. 312.
Stefan was closer. Okay. 233. So I guess Stefan goes first.
Okay. So in Australia in 2018, a 60-year-old man went in for emergency heart surgery. And as they were cracking open his chest,
he caught on fire!
What? Hold your horses. So they noticed that his lung was kind of stuck to the sternum a little bit.
Ooh.
He had COPD, which is a lung disease. Then part of that is that parts of his lung were overinflated. I guess that results in it sticking to the sternum somehow.
Sure.
So they were being careful about this while they were like cracking him open, but they ended up puncturing the lung accidentally while getting to the heart. Mm-hmm. And on its own, this is not like the end of the world. They increase the amount of oxygen and anesthetic gases like going into his lungs to like sort of compensate.
Love it. Good case study. I'm enjoying this.
And so in a lot of surgeries, they use what are called electrocautery devices, and it uses a high frequency electric current to generate heat. They use it for various things like cutting tissue, stopping bleeding, all kinds of stuff. But so in this case, there was a spark and it ignited like some of the dry material that was in the like open chest cavity.
No.
And like because of the extra oxygen, a fire started in his open chest.
No,
cavity.
No, that's the worst thing.
Which I shouldn't laugh. They put
it out. I don't know how it ended.
They put it out immediately.
They just poured a bunch of water on him, as you do. Just baking soda.
I don't know the extinguishing method, but they put it out.
Just turn off the oxygen
very quickly.
For a second,
but he gotta breathe.
Just like boom, boom. Take away the fuel.
You've got to disrupt the triangle.
Yeah, you got to disrupt the tetrahedron.
The tetrahedron.
It used to be a triangle, it looks like. But,
sorry. Yeah, the patient was fine in this case, and they continued the surgery afterwards and like finished that out. But there have been at least 3 cases of this specific kind of thing where it's like a similar tool ignited some surgical material, and the patient had lung disease and there was getting extra oxygen. And so that's just kind of like nuts in general. But it turns out that surgical fire is kind of a thing that happens more frequently than you might think.
Oh, that's a great episode of SciShow, Surgical Fire. I want to start a new channel called Surgical Fire. Just that's all we're talking about.
Overall, it is very rare. A pre-2012 figure cites about 600 cases a year in the U.S.,
Okay.
And that's out of like 40 million plus surgeries.
How the fuck are we having 40 million surgeries? There's only 300 million of us.
Well, I had 10 last year.
So, you're getting the most of your health insurance.
So that was pre-2012. But then in 2012, the healthcare facilities code adopted like new procedures and training protocols and stuff aimed at reducing that number. Mm-hmm. And so a more recent figure is that we're down to about 100 cases annually. So it's been good. Significantly reduced, but still, that's like a lot of cases. Not many people die from it, but some people are burned.
And then you like finish up your open heart surgery and they're like, you're like, so how'd it go, doc? And he's like, well, a very rare thing called, now this is a technical term, surgical fire occurred. And let me explain exactly what that is. It's a fire in the surgery. Your lung caught on fire because there was dry stuff in it. And too much oxygen.
Uh-huh.
You wouldn't break it like that to a patient. No, be like,
not with your Muppet voice, especially.
Yelling at them.
All right, Sam, you got a battle to fight here. That was pretty good.
Oh, now you made me really nervous when you said that. Just,
well, you're also in the lead, so I'm not here to help you out.
Yeah, I don't care. So, a magnifying glass's ability to focus and direct light is well known to like every boy or Girl Scout or Scout, survivalist or bad little boy blasting ants with lasers. In fact, some of the earliest written evidence of magnifying glasses refers to their ability to generate heat instead of their magnification powers. Like Pliny the Elder had a lens he would carry around. Pliny?
I don't know.
Whatever. He's dead. He had one he carried around. He cauterized wounds with it.
Oh.
And that's like one of the earliest.
Wait a second.
Wow, yeah. And it was surgical fires.
Yeah.
Was he just looking for wounds? He's like,
oh, no. He was an active folk. He was doing all kinds of things.
Okay.
People would be like, something's wrong with me. And then he'd have five different suggestions for you.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Greek polymath Archimedes is even said to have made a weapon out of a giant magnifying glass that he used to incinerate a fleet of Roman warships in 212 BC. But modern man has had trouble recreating that weapon.
Yeah, because it's fake.
At least they've had trouble recreating it on purpose. So 20 Fenchurch Street in London is home to a big, lumpy, weird skyscraper known colloquially as the walkie-talkie building. I don't really know why. It's designed to look top-heavy, so all the exterior walls sort of bend out and balloon, so it's like big and lumpy on the top and skinny on the bottom. An unintended side effect to this weird design is that for 2 hours every day for about 2 to 3 weeks of the year, the sun shines directly on one of the concave sides. The wall is like mirror glass windows, so it focuses light onto the street below it. And on a particularly hot day in 2013, the beam reflected off the building was 6 times brighter than like the surrounding area, the regular sunlight. And a guy who had his bike parked there measured his bicycle seat, and it had reached 224 degrees Fahrenheit.
So almost hot enough to burn paper. Very close.
A number of parked cars on the street also had the bodies melted and like the plastic inside of the cars melted, and they had to pay a bunch of people because of that. And store owners reported that their doormats would start smoldering sometimes if they left them out.
So the beam is like moving as the sun moves.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And, like, that's cool.
Yeah. So the spot was kind of like a tourist destination that summer of 2013, and people would come and they would like fry eggs and do all kinds of wacky stuff and take temperatures. But then within months of them figuring out how bad it was and paying a bunch of people because they melted their cars, they paid millions of pounds. I don't know how much like American money that is, to cover the windows with a non-reflective metal shade. And also, this architect who designed this building had designed another building in Las Vegas that had the same exact problem, except this one would focus light into a pool deck. And some people said that it made their hair start smoking when the light went in a certain way. But to be fair to him, he did seem like he knew that that would happen. So he had designed ways to make it not happen, but they didn't build it into the building in the front. They learned after the fact.
Yeah, too. he was like, so I've built a giant death ray.
Yeah.
And you need to, like, this is how I've designed. I'm aware that I built a death ray, but you have to do X and Y to fix it. And they were like, yeah, all we heard was death ray, money, 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 no thanks.
Can we still
No, it's all fixed.
It's all like covered up. Yeah. It doesn't do it anymore.
Doesn't do it anymore.
Feels like it'd be a glorious.
It just
experience.
Did it for that one summer in 2013. Yeah,
missed it.
Yeah. No more death.
Well,
ray.
I'm glad. So, like, I did. I as you were saying this, I was like, "There's no way they could have not known that this would be a thing."
Yeah.
Like you don't build a building like this, and are like, "Hey, let's see what happens."
Yeah, I read that they used the wrong kind of window because it was a cheaper window they used on purpose to lower costs, but. Yeah.
All right, we have our facts. One, we've got a 60-year-old man who caught on fire during surgery. It was a surgical fire, and it turns out it's a thing that happens. When people catch on fire during surgery, and it's not good. Or we have a death laser building built in London by a man who also built a death laser building in Las Vegas. Where are we going to do it on three? Are you ready, Sari?
Yeah, this is so hard. Okay, we'll do it on three.
Three, two, one,
Stefan.
Oh, you bastards.
Yeah. He's actually had fire. If you had said the bike exploded,
some of the
they smoldered.
The doormats smoldered.
Pretty
some
close.
Of the doormats smoldered.
I was just waiting for something in your story to be like, and then the doormat was a fire mat. Like the car.
I would suspect probably pretty quick they were like, we can't leave anything here that will actually catch on fire.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And now it's time to ask the science couch. We've got listener questions to ask to our couch of finely honed scientific minds. This one is from @GabbyLion. How would fire spread in space? In sci-fi movies, it looks as though explosions are the same as they are on Earth, but I've heard that flame itself would be spherical. So, like, what? Are we talking about explosions or fires? Because those are two different
things.
We're
talking about fires because the theme episode of the episode is fires.
Yeah. Fire in space is a sphere, for sure, because the reason that fire isn't a sphere on Earth is because heat... like hotter air moves upward because hot air is less dense and the cold air is falling down around it. And that's a gravity thing. And in places where there is no gravity, then you don't have to deal with it. There's no shape to fire. Another thing about fire in space is that it doesn't generate its own wind. So on Earth, with the convection of like throwing up the hot air, the cold air has to come in to replace it because it creates a low pressure area. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't happen in space.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Because that means that the fire would give it, like, it would replenish itself less quickly.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It would have less oxygen to fuel it.
Yeah, oxygen is brought in space by just diffusion.
Right.
Which is really interesting because it's still expanding because hot air expands because the molecules get farther apart.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, like, whatever... oxygen is around it, like diffuses into this fire orb.
Mm-hmm.
Heat also, I don't know if diffusion is the right word, but is dissipating. I guess but that doesn't affect how the fire spreads.
I mean, the heat is moving and like, so like the energy, like the molecules are bumping into their molecules and that's increasing the energy of molecules farther and farther away.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not creating any sort of like,
and I think that would be the, it wouldn't create a wind, but that would be the mechanism of the spread of the fire. So when the fire, like when the like hot molecules start to hit other things, that energy gets transferred and the fire still can spread.
Mm-hmm.
And fire is a huge problem in space, but not because like fire spreads any more effectively in space, just because there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Like there's no egress windows on the space station.
Fire spreads more slowly in space. So there was a quote from some NASA scientist that said, if you ignite a piece of paper in microgravity, the fire will just creep along from one end to the other, which is what happens on Earth, but like fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But in space, it would just be like a slower reaction happening.
Yeah. You need to blow on it.
Yeah.
Maybe that would speed it up.
You want to help it out. Yeah.
Which you don't in general want to help the fire out.
I have more space fire facts.
Yeah. Okay.
This is the coolest thing that I've read today. NASA ran an experiment called the Flame Extinguishment Experiment, or FLEX, to see what fire did in microgravity. And that's where the pictures of the dome fire and the sphere fire come from. The way that they do it, they have a special equipment rack in which they lit the fires. And they ignited a small drop of heptane or methanol as the fuel. And the most surprising thing that they found was the discovery of cool flames.
Ooh, great.
But when the droplets are still burning, so they're still like evaporating, the fuel is being used up after you can't see the flame anymore.
Mm.
So it doesn't look like there's fire anymore. but you know that fire, like combustion, is still happening.
Now we're going full circle to the beginning. Is it fire if there are no flames?
NASA says yes, which is NASA why I didn't want to jump in on that.
Is it still burny and hurdy if you touch the...
I think so.
Okay.
Ordinary fire, according to this NASA video, the temperature ranges from around 2200 to 3100 degrees Fahrenheit. And like the main things being emitted from it are soot and carbon dioxide and water, like we talked about. But the cool flame and the heptane ball, it was around 400 to 1000 Fahrenheit. And the main things being released were carbon monoxide and formaldehyde.
Weird.
And there are cool flames that happen on Earth. So, like, we first discover them on Earth, but they flicker out almost immediately, or they're, let me see. The discovery is attributed to a dude called Sir Humphrey Davy in 1812. Oh, yeah. And so he found that he could generate flames that were so weak that they couldn't light anything. And so then after that, people investigated cool flames, which are just barely visible or invisible flame, and much colder than a normal flame. And so before this discovery in space, people thought that cool flames almost always happened before igniting fires. But this is the first big instance where it's like, oh, we can have cool flames after a bigger fire.
It's part of the process of like the burning of the last fuel. Interesting.
Yeah, so they're investigating why, because this was like this big mystery. The evaporation rates were basically the same to what was in a visible flame. I think also when this happened, they were able to change some things about the pressure of the container it was in. And so after it became a cool flame, it reignited into a normal hot flame, which is concerning in space because they were worried that microgravity conditions might be conducive to reignition of fires that you think are out. And so that was basically like, yep, you should have that worry because this flame that you couldn't see anymore became a flame again.
Secret flame.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, combustion researchers, their minds were blown with these discoveries about space science.
The people who care about this were very excited.
Yeah, they were like, fire is so weird. You know that thing that we study and we thought we knew?
We don't.
We don't, even more.
Thank God for space.
Yeah.
And they went and told their spouses and they were like, oh.
If you want to ask the Science Couch your questions, you can follow us on Twitter at @SciShowTangents. We will tweet out the topics for upcoming episodes every week. Thank you to Emily Janet Six and at @Dana01 and everybody else who tweeted us your questions this episode. Final scores. Everybody's tied at 1 except for Stefan with 3.
Oh. You cleaned up.
Wow.
We're doing it. We're doing it.
Where am I now?
There's a lot of clustering. Stefan at 66, Sari at 68, Sam at 69. So you're all very close to each other. I'm at 62. I'm fine. I have other things going for me.
Yeah, you have a child. You have a company to run.
We have finished our first season, I guess, our first year of SciShow Tangents. Stefan, it wasn't enough. You did not get yourself into second place, much less first. And so, Sari, I'm sorry, but we have a winner. With 1 point ahead of you is Sam Schultz.
Why do you say Sari? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
well, I would apologize to you if you were leaving.
Sam, congratulations.
Sam, congratulations. You are the winner of the first year of SciShow Tangents.
Nobody ever even passed me.
Yeah. Well, also, it's nice to have a winner, and we can all just celebrate Sam for a little while.
Yeah,
everyone,
nice.
Tweet to Sam. Say thank you.
Congratulations,
Sam. And then tweet to Sari and say, I'm sorry.
No, don't do that.
Yeah. Should they be called Sambucks now? Like, is that your prize for the next
now.
Year?
Yeah.
Okay, they're Sambucks now.
Now they're Sambucks.
I think that's a really nice title.
That's a really
title.
Great prize.
Yeah, like so like it. Really fight for the buck title next year.
Okay.
Yeah. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's very easy to do that. You can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show. It also helps other people know that you like the show. And we're going to be looking at iTunes reviews for topic ideas for future episodes. Second, you can tweet out your favorite moment from the episode. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just
Tell people about us.
Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
I've been Stephen Chu.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is a co-production of Complexly and the wonderful team at WNYC Studios. It's created by all of us and produced by Caitlin Hoffmeister and Sam Schultz, who also edits a lot of these episodes along with Hiroko Matsushima. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tunamedish. Our social media organizer is Victoria Bongiorno. And we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. In regions of the world where they don't want to use water flushing toilets for a variety of reasons, like if there's not municipal sewage systems or the infrastructure for that, or remote rest areas or things like that, there are these things called incinerating toilets, which are self-contained units of like a toilet where you put your poop in a bag, I think.
I do?
And then it goes down onto maybe a little conveyor belt or maybe just into a chamber. And there is a gas or electric or some sort of powered heating system that turns your poop into ash. And it's a way to reduce the volume of it because so much of poop is water. So that all evaporates off, and sanitize it. So you don't have like poop bacteria. You just have like the small teaspoon, tablespoon of ash.
Poop ash. Can you use it for something?
No, that's the one downside is that you can't use it for fertilizer or anything because you burn off all the nutrients too.
What do they do with it?
Just throw
it
away.
To the wind.
Scatter it to the wind. Yeah. They take it to the beach and scatter and say, I remember him. He was a great poop. I appreciated the work he did on this earth, and now he joins the... He will be part of the natural system once again.
Here you go, fish.
Here you go, fish. Have my poop ash.